Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, you're listening to On Israel in Al Monitor. I am Ben Kaspit from Tel Aviv. In Vienna, representatives of world powers are playing a game of wild poker with Iran. The Americans are in a nearby room, excluded from the table by Trump's decision to pull out of the deal with Tehran. Meanwhile, Israel is trying to take advantage of the standoff to make its case in Washington. The U.S. Capitol has been under a massive Israeli blitz in recent weeks, which peaked this week with the visits of Mossad Director Barnea, who met with the CIA and other officials, and Defense Minister Gantz, who met with the Secretaries Blinken and Austin. Israel is pulling out all the stops, trying to convince its American friend that this is an emergency, that it's now or never, and that unless maximum power is exerted on the Iranians right now, the U.S. will lose the deterrence it still has against the Ayatollahs, perhaps forever. The Israelis are hinting strongly that if that happens, they will be forced to do what their previous Prime Minister Netanyahu hesitated to do, attack Iran, whether directly or otherwise, in order to prevent the Islamic Republic's ambitions to become a nuclear power. Our guest today was intimately involved in the contacts with Washington over Iran. Professor Yaakov Nagel, a reserve brigadier general, served as Benjamin Netanyahu's national security advisor. He was in the room when Israel was shaping its policy on a U.S. pullout from the deal with Iran. He was there when President Trump was persuaded to pull the plug during a period that many Israelis look back on Israel's glory days in Washington. Netanyahu and Trump are no longer in office. They are also no longer friends. And Professor Nagel's term has also ended. He will be with us right after this short break.
I'm Elizabeth Hagedorn, and I'm the State Department correspondent at Al Monitor.
And I'm Joe Snell. I'm Al Monitor's video editor. Let's admit it, this past year has been difficult to stay on top of the news and sift through what's accurate and what's misleading. Let Al Monitor help you.
If you care about the Middle East and North Africa, you should consider listening to Al Monitor's audio series On the Middle East with Andrew Parasoliti and Amber Nzimon, and On Israel with Ben Kaspit. You can now watch our newest video podcast, Reading the Middle East with Gilles Kapel. You can subscribe to these series on your favorite podcast platforms.
And through a host of free daily and weekly newsletters, we offer a range of perspectives with the highest journalistic standards. You can subscribe to these newsletters at almonitor.com.
As an award-winning media service headquartered in Washington, D.C., Al Monitor has a network of over 160 contributors around the world.
So if you haven't done so already, be sure to visit almonitor.com, where you can find all of these newsletters and podcasts, along with first-class reporting and analysis.
Now I'm very privileged to say hello and welcome Brigadier General Reserves Professor Jacob Nagel, Senior Fellow of the FDD, former National Security Advisor and National Security Council Head Acting. Thank you, Mr. Nagel, Professor Nagel, for joining us here in On Israel in Al Monitor. Welcome. Shalom.
Shalom, and thank you for hosting me. I'm really privileged.
Okay. I presume that, like all of us, you've been following the drama in Vienna and Israel's contacts with Washington and other capitals. What do you think Israel should try for at this stage, out of the available options. There is talk about returning to the 2015 agreement or reaching a newer, leaner agreement in which the sides would give less and get less. Other options are for the sides to keep treading water, or for the talks to blow up, meaning that the sanctions would remain in place and may even be tightened. Which of all these options do you think would be best for Israel, of course?
First of all, I don't agree that it's a drama. It's a well-orchestrated story that the Iranians are running, with all the climax being fixed in advance, and I hope I will be wrong. Now, I assume that this question is really wide, and probably I can enlarge my widen my answer. It maybe it will be the basic for the continuation of our talk.
Okay.
First of all, you laid up some options. One of them, take off from the table. There is no returning to the 2015 agreement. Even Robert Malley, the special envoy, Biden's special envoy to the talks, understands that you cannot go back to 2015. Even so, all the group that is working for Biden now, Sherman, Sullivan, Barnes, Malley, all the others are the leaders of the 2015 agreement. First of all, because what we learned since 2015, and second, because the Iranians just made so much progress because of the mistakes that people did in the 2015, mostly the advanced centrifuges and the sunset. So this is option you take off the table. Now, yes, I agree with you that the United States wants, and they are telling us, look, this is only the beginning. What we want is a longer, stronger, wider, it's okay, but they are talking to themselves. The Iranians are laughing. And what you mentioned at the third one, and I'm sure you read some of my articles, this is the worst of all. What the Americans and others call less for less, or different for different, I call it more for less, or very much more for very much less. And this is the worst of all. Now, yes, I'm afraid from what you asked about treading water. This is what is going on now. This is the best for the Iranians. This is the reason for the Iranian strategy and their demands in Vienna, and the American really, you know, I don't want to use very hard words, but they are really doing exactly what the Iranians want. And the European have to, you know, strike their teeth. And the Chinese and the Russians are really brushing their hands and enjoy watching the movie. And this is all without even talking, and I don't know if we'll have time, to talk about Syria, Lebanon, Hamas, PGMs, and all the other things that the Iranians are doing. I belong to those that have to say that we have to differentiate between the nuclear problem and all others. But the Iranians are continuing doing this and continuing, and again, this is will be a rush one, they are spitting in the face of all the participants, especially the Americans, and they enjoy the rain.
So actually, you did not pick up one because there are no more options, unfortunately, after the demise.
Okay, now, no, this is my okay. This is my end sentence. I thought you want to ask something. Now, what is the option that you can do? And I'm sure we'll come back to it later. We, the United States and the Europeans, I don't recall the Chinese and the Russians joining this time, the maximum economical pressure on the Iranians, and putting on the table credible military threat, credible economical threat. Now, I didn't elaborate, but the Iranian strategy stands on 4 feet. First of all, they are saying that the Americans, they have the capability to stop the nuclear program. They have the capability to strike or to attack. but they are not going to do it because they are weak and it's not part of their DNA, it's not part of their diplomatic scheme of solving the thing that I agree if it's going to the right way. The second leg is they say, okay, Israel is looking and see US weak. Israel don't have the capability to attack and strike Iran. And unfortunately, and I'm not saying it's right, I'm saying it's wrong, but unfortunately, some unresponsible Israelis, most of them, some of them are, don't know what they're talking, but some of them are ex very, very high-ranked officials. And they're saying, yes, we slept, we fell asleep in our shift and we didn't do anything. We don't have capabilities. So I'm closing the circuit and saying, look, I'm not saying what we have, what we don't have. This is things that we are not talking about, but for sure, we know what to do. And so this second leg, the Iranians should understand that it's wrong.
So we have the weak, we have the weakness of the Americans and the capability.
The weakness of the Americans, the, Israel,
Capabilities of Israel.
The Americans have the capability, but they don't do it because they are weak.
The Israel,
this is, again, this is the Iranian strategy. Israel don't have the capability, they are wrong, but they are leaning on some Israelis and some others, don't have the capability, and they are looking on the Americans, so they are not going to strike alone. Third leg is that the Iranians believe that their economy can withstand the pressure that they have now in this level. And you know what? I'm not sure they are wrong in this or the only leg, that they can withstand 2, 3, 4 more years of this economical pressure. And the fourth one, very important one, they don't see any credible threat against their regime, their economy, their life, their families, their personal belongings. All of those threats that brought them to the table, 2003, 2009, 2012, those are not on the table. So if you ask me what is out of the options that you didn't mention, what is the option that they must take? And if the Iranians will understand that this is the real option, maybe, I'm not sure, maybe something will happen, is that maximum pressure, much, much, much bigger than more than what they have now, and credible threats on all parameters. Those are the two things that we must do.
Okay, so let's proceed. And I agree with you that the American approach is very naive. But I mentioned, and I saw, not only me, that just before Minister Gantz arrived in Washington last week, a senior U.S. official was quoted as saying that the meeting with Austin between the two defense ministers would include discussion of possible joint military exercises to prepare for what he called the worst option of a military strike if diplomacy fails. And you know better than I do that Israel has long been begging the Americans to place a credible military threat. You just said it yourself on the table in order to lead the Iranians in the right direction. Do you see this as a significant step in the right direction? Try to be optimistic.
I am totally see it as a step in the right direction. I see a really, really, really importance, really, really very much importance in these directions. Is it going to happen? I'm not sure, because I remind you again, the team that is working on this issue, Austin was not part of the team of 2015, but all the others, yes. So the team have an internal obligation to this crazy, bad, defected agreement of 2015. Now, in a negotiation, you give some, you take some. Some people call it carrots and sticks. This negotiation now is carrots and carrots. You know, in Hebrew, it's even sounds better, but this is an English interview, so I won't say, you know, the two sides of negotiation. Give and take, in this negotiation is give and give. This is something that we cannot continue. It's something that I don't think we can take. Now, some people say, and again, I don't think it's right, but maybe there is something in it, that what you see lately, that, you know, even the current government in Israel, everyone is now singing the same song. I really, you know, my view, I really like it. It was not like this a few weeks ago, but everyone is you know, is standing in the same line. Some people say it's because the Americans asked us to do it, and we are falling in the pit again. Meaning that every time when Israel become, you know, threatening and others on behalf of the United States, then the Iranians, I'm not saying are being frightened, but maybe now, maybe it makes them to go to the table.
Actually,
and give up some.
You're saying
Americans.
That we're
maybe the Americans are using us. People are saying so.
You're hinting that we're supposedly playing with the Americans, the good cup, bad cup. A play game, that we are the bad cup and they are the good cup. And I want to ask you, you've been until recently the Israel's national security advisor. And if you could sit down with Jake Sullivan, the President Biden's national security advisor, and until recently your American counterpart, what would you tell him in one sentence, the strongest thing that you can tell him about the danger or whatever of Iran becoming nuclear?
First of all, it was not my counterpart. He's sitting in the position of my counterpart. Remember that on my shift, I had the counterpart, Susan Rice. It's about not easy.
Of course.
She's very, you know, she has her own ideas. She's very tough. I even negotiated the MOU with her. But remember that Jake Sullivan, and I think Jake Sullivan is a really positive person. I know that my replacement, Eyal Chulata, have very good relations with him. Mm-hmm. And he really wants the best for the United States and for Israel. But he was part of the team, together with Barents and some others from the State Department and the White House, sitting in Oman, closing the main argument of the agreement with Iran before we even started the negotiations. For example, they gave them, okay, you will be able to enrich uranium. For the first time, a country that is under your Security Council sanctions, not to enrich at all. The Americans are coming to Israel telling us there will be zero enrichment in Iran at the final, and they are closing behind the scenes. Yes, you will get, and the details will be later. So if I have to tell him one sentence, is exactly what I told you before. You want something to happen, the Iranians have to understand that you are serious and you are not playing their game. You have to put on the table a very, very massive and productive pressure, the maximum pressure plus, and the credible threat. And please start, leave the word fear is not good, but leave, like, I am afraid that there will be a blow up of the talks. Just one sentence. Remember that the Iranians need these talks and this agreement much more than you. Raisi won't come to Vienna, won't send these people to Vienna unless he understands that if you want to do something to this, to the falling Iranian economy, you have to reach some kind of an agreement. They're still coming with the maximum demands. What I am afraid is that at the end, we'll find ourselves with, you know, they are giving up 3%, 4%, 5%. They are letting them into garage. Wow, what an achievement. And then the Americans and the Europeans, everyone who come, we had a very, very big achievements. We have a very good agreement. It's better than a war. Let's go back. And then they check up the mark and they can continue to go to Syria, to China, to Russia, to North Korea, to Corona, to economy. If I look on their top 10 list, unfortunately, Iran is number 11. This is the problem. This is what I would tell to my good friend Sadivan, that I don't know.
Number 11 is you're going far. You know, we're used to say that China is number one, COVID-19
no, is what number... I'm saying is that out of the top 10, Iran is number 11.
Yes, yes, understood.
Out of the top 20, Iran is number 21.
Understood. I want to ask you a delicate question. Does Iran already fit the definition of a threshold nuclear state? And if so, can Israel afford to accept this status? And I'm asking it because we all know that they are already enriching uranium to the level of 60%. We all know that going from 60 to 95 to military level is very easy. We all know they have the centrifuges that are very fast and very modern, the R-8 and etc. So they're actually there.
A very, 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 very important question. Maybe the most important that you ask me. First of all, as I said before, I don't remember if I said it already, what is the definition of a threshold country? People are tending to do a lot of mistakes, and you almost fell to this all again. You are not measuring a threshold country by saying what level of enrichment they are doing now, what they are having, how much time it will take them to do this and this and this. Of course, all of those things are important. You are measuring a threshold country by only one parameter. Are they in the situation that it's only their decision when they want to go and to become a nuclear state? So they don't have to be a nuclear state. They have to be in a status that it's only their decision to become nuclear, and they are in a status that no one can stop them from becoming nuclear.
Irreversible.
For example, Japan is a threshold country. No one cares because Japan don't want to build a nuclear bomb. Germany is a nuclear threshold country. No one cares because they are not going to build. Iran cannot be in this situation, and those people that are saying that we can accept, some of them Americans, some of them even Israelis, and of course some other countries in the world, that we can accept, and we even, you know, there are some reporters that you know very good that say, look, forget it. We have to start living with the fact that Iran will become a threshold country. We have to live in and understand that we cannot stop it. This is a very, 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 very big mistake. Because once Iran will be a threshold country, and of course, once there will be a nuclear, and I'm sure we'll talk about it later, the world won't look again the same. Now, are Iran there now? No. Are they very close? Yes. Now, I'll tell you one sentence that once we were sitting with Wendy Sherman and others during 2012-13, when we started negotiating before the agreement was signed, and Israel threatened to attack, and I'm sure you know, and you wrote about it a lot.
Of course.
And they were asking us, I was then the deputy NSA, and Jacob Amidror was the head. And she was asking us, what about Israel attacking? Are you going to do it today, tomorrow? And then we were sitting in a classified, you know, video conference. He was used to open the curtain, look on the sky and say, you know what, my good friend Sherman, I don't see planes in the sky. So it's meaning it's not going to be today. Is it going to be tomorrow? I don't know. Israel, and it's connecting to the question you asked me before. Israel will do what it needs when we'll come to the point that we'll decide that tomorrow is too late. Now, tomorrow can be next week or next month, but when we will decide and we'll come to the understanding that we don't have time, and tomorrow it will be too late, so Iran will go into what we call the immune zone, the place that you cannot stop her, then we'll have to do what we need to do with ever what we have. It can be 90%, 70, 20, and preferred 100% of the capabilities.
I think you explained it in a way that I understood. Minister Gantz told the Americans that Iran should not be considered an Israeli problem because it's in fact a threat to the world and to the region. What are the implications of a nuclear Iran for the Middle East, the Gulf? I'm sure that you dealt with it when you were in office. What will it make, people are talking about a nuclear race between all the states in the Middle East, etc.
I must say you did your homework very good and you asked all the right questions about this very sensitive issue. To explain your audience, what are the biggest threats and dangerous with Iran, with nuclear Iran. Look, if Iran will become nuclear or even threshold country, it will open an arm race in our area. You imagine that Saudi Arabia will stay still when Iran will be nuclear. Now remember that this is coming back to the defective 2015 agreement. They gave the Iranians to enrich uranium with the IR-1s 5,000 plus centrifuges. Now they said it's a very big achievement because they were going, they had 10,000 and they were going to 20,000, now they have 5. It's like when I, find a burglar in my home and I stop him and he say, you know what? I'm telling him, you know what? Leave my wife and children, don't kill them and I'll give you all the jewelry that you found. It's crazy. They gave them 5,000. Now the Pakistanians with the same IR-1s, because Abdul Qadir Khan is the one that gave them, with 7,000 centrifuges, they built 70 nuclear bombs. Now, so we cannot say that we can accept Iran as a threshold country or as a nuclear. It will open a race. It's Egypt, it's Jordan, it's Turkey, it's Saudi, all over, and the world won't be the same. And of course, the Iranians will start behave different in our area. The aggression in Syria, their militias, all the things that we are doing, sometimes we take responsibility, sometimes according to foreign press, all the war between wars, our that we stop the PGMs, the precise guided munitions coming from Iran via Syria to Lebanon. They want to build a very, very, very massive threat against Israel. All those who find us here, they will, they will leave the leash will be out. And it will be another world. Now, some people say, we have to stop. We don't have to do it now. We have to gain a time. We have to prepare ourselves. To prepare ourselves for what? I call it as a phrase, I don't need time to build stables that once I'm going to finish to build the stable, I don't have horses to put inside. So I don't have time to spend and to prepare. The problem is now. They are very close. We have to stop them now. This is the idea.
Since you've answered also my last question, I will trade it with a different one. And I will ask you, without getting into politics, because national security is a concern of everyone in Israel, if I would tell you that the maximum pressure strategy and the pulling out of the agreement will bring us to the situation today when the Iranians survived, Trump is not there anymore, the Americans did not attack, would you still say it was a good thing to do? It was worthwhile? Wasn't it a mistake? Looking now in retrospect.
Look, this is really a little bit politics, but I don't care because it's not real politics.
Leave politics. Now I'm asking professional,
and again, take out what President Trump just said in some interviews that were published in the last few days. Now, what I'm saying is, it was the most important thing that I think that, again, there are others, taking the embassy to Jerusalem. It's the most important. Why? Because, and this is something that I have a lot of debates with my good friends. Some of them, that people say that Israel didn't, and I will elaborate a little bit. It's the last question that you said. All about. People said Israel was not part of the negotiations. We didn't affect them. Total nonsense. I was the head of the Israeli expert team. In my team, there was almost everyone. The Mossad, the IDF, the foreign ministry, the strategic department. Everyone was in my team. We met almost, I think I did something like 50 flights, mostly to the US, but also to UK, France, Germany. You know, yeah. I did once to China. I found it a waste of time, and two times to Russia also. But we wrote something like 50 to 70 technological papers telling them the agreement is very, very, very bad, but at least understand what you're doing. Change this, change them. And then they came and say, okay, we helped them to make a better agreement. No, we made this agreement a little bit less worse. Now, what I'm saying is that pulling out of it was the best thing to do. Why? Because some people say, but what you did then, do now, negotiate, give the Americans. Then there was a negotiation, at least there was a negotiation of what to write in the agreement. For example, there is a section of one page talking about the weapon system. We wrote it, but they didn't mean to force it. This is what Amano told us. He told, well, you don't remember that the Russians, Americans, we agreed it's a page in the agreement for the Israelis. We are not going to force it. We don't know how to force it. But there was three alternatives. There was a bad agreement, no agreement, and a good agreement. The good agreement was not on the table. Mm-hmm. So it was a bad agreement that Obama called a good agreement. Today, we have two alternatives. We have alternative between a no agreement and a bad agreement. Even the American, everyone understands that the only agreement we can get now from the Iranians is a very bad one. Maybe worse if it will be the more for less one. It will be worse than the 2015. If somehow they will say we are going back without having the capability and the physics to go back, it will be worse as before, and then 6 years passed. Now, Obama said, working on the 2015 agreement will make them for sure 0 minutes from the bomb. But I hope that now, Netanyahu told him, look, I cannot put my future, my country, my nation future on ops. This is why pulling out of the agreement at least was supposed to do a change. Now, what happened since? Look, the biggest violations of the Iranians of the agreement is after Biden was elected, not from 2018 is more than 2015. But also between 2015 and 2018, they violated the agreement. But after 2018, they violated more. And after 2021, they violated very much more. Still, nothing happened. Where is the snapback? Where it is? They said, no, if they are allowed 300 kilo of low enrichment uranium, they have 301. And now when it happens, no, for 1 kilo, you do a war. For 200 kilo, for 1 ton. Well, we ask them write a list of if they do this and this and this and this, the agreement will do this and this and this.
Where is the red line you actually ask?
Diplomacy, you are not doing those kind of things. This is why pulling out of the agreement was the best thing to do. And I'm saying it now, after 3 years, not just then.
Professor Brigadier General Yaakov Nagel, it was extremely interesting and deep. And I thank you again very much for joining us here on Israel in Al Monitor. Thank you very much. Toda rabba, toda.
Toda rabba, thank you very much. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Gilles Kepel, professor at Sciences Po and Normal Sup in Paris, and author of a number of books and articles on the Middle East. Through my new podcast, Reading the Middle East, on the award-winning media service Al Monitor, we will take a deep dive into the trends in the region with the authors and thought leaders who are shaping how we think about the Middle East. Reading the Middle East will be a fantastic addition to Al Monitor's outstanding podcast lineup, including On the Middle East with Andrew Parazziliti and Amber Inzaman, and On Israel with Ben Caspit. You can subscribe on your favorite listening platforms. We look forward to your joining our conversation.
Thank you for staying with us. Professor, Brigadier General Yaakov Nagel gave us many, many headlines. He was National Security Advisor until not long ago. And he was in the room, and he said, first of all, that we don't see any drama. Nothing is surprising him right now. The whole event in Vienna is designated and orchestrated, in Nagel's voice or opinion, by Iran. And another thing he said, that there will be no going back to the JCPOA, the 2015 agreement. He said even Rob Malley, the president's special envoy to the Iranian issue, said and admitted it, because the Iranians, since the United States pulled out of the agreement, advanced a lot. And we know now many things we did not know before. And it's too late for this agreement to be renewed. Professor Nagel, that was Benjamin Netanyahu's amen to the negotiation and everything else, was very, he criticized the American attitude and strategy in very harsh words. He said that every negotiation has to be, or to contain, carrots and sticks, but this negotiation is only sticks. I'm sorry, only carrots. The Americans give and they don't get anything in return from the Iranians. He said that the Americans are talking to themselves. They're not talking actually to Iran, and the Iranians are laughing. They wanted they came to Vienna only to lift the sanctions, not to give anything else, and they are actually spitting in the face of the Americans, in Nagel's words, and the Americans convince themselves that it's rain. A very important part of this conversation was about me asking him, is Iran already a threshold nuclear state? And Professor Nagel denied it fiercely, and he was very, very clear on it. He said that measuring how much enriched uranium you have, 60% or 3.5, is not important at all. The only thing that is important in order to define you as a nuclear threshold state is the question, is the only thing that puts you apart from the nuclear bomb is your decision. If it only your decision to become nuclear is the thing that now stands between you and the goal. He said that Japan, for example, and Germany are threshold nuclear states. They have all the capabilities and all the know-how and everything, infrastructure, but no one is worried because they don't want to be there. Is Iran there now? I asked him. He said, no. Are they closing in? Yes. And he also said that Israel, when we will reach this point, this exact point, late Meir Dagan, head of Mossad, said, when the sword will be on our neck, then Israel will do whatever it can do, said the Professor Nagel, strike Iran with 100% of our capabilities. And this is a very interesting thing to think about, 100% of Israel's capabilities. I hope you found it interesting. I did. And I hope to find you here next week in the same place and the same time in On Israel, in Al Monitor. I'm Ben Kaspit from Tel Aviv. Take care and bye-bye.